It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the broadcast. I'm Bill Price, vice presidential debate tonight.
I think there's a real focus on the vice president in a way that we've never seen before.
That is our top story at noon. The current VP, Mike Pence, and the person who wants his job, California Senator Kamala Harris, will square off tonight for their first and only vice presidential debate. Reporter Nicole Killian gets us started from Salt Lake City.
Crews at the University of Utah installed plexiglass shields to separate the vice presidential candidates, who will be seated at least 12 feet apart. The team for Vice President Mike Pence, the head of the coronavirus task force, initially opposed the extra precaution, which was requested by the Biden-Harris campaign.
That is Nicole Killian reporting. Everyone attending tonight's debate will be required to wear a face mask. As for the plexiglass separating the candidates, Team Trump isn't sold on that.
I'm not sure that the science is settled on that, that a plexiglass divider has any impact whatsoever.
Trump campaign director Tim Murtaugh, tonight's debate will be divided into 9 segments, and unlike the presidential debate, the candidates are expected to get into more policy issues. Louisiana Republican John Kennedy says the Democratic ticket for president has been hijacked by the radical left.
Support abortion, illegal immigration, open borders, sanctuary cities, socialized medicine, defunding the police, gutting the Second Amendment, higher taxes, more regulation, a weaker military, and hugs and hot cocoa for Iran.
As for Kamala Harris's game plan tonight, the pundits expect her to go after President Trump more than she does Mike Pence. Tonight's debate starts at 9. 2 long sought after ISIS terrorists face a judge today in Alexandria, Virginia, nicknamed the Beatles because of their British accents. The men were captured on the battlefield in Syria 2 years ago. They're accused of beheading 2 dozen hostages, including American journalist James Foley.
My message to other terrorists is this: if you harm an American, you will face the same fate as these men. You will face American justice in an American courtroom and the prospect of many years in an American prison.
Federal prosecutor John Demers says the U.S. government had to drop the death penalty in order to get the 2 accused ISIS operatives into the U.S. to stand trial. After stopping talks with Democrats on a comprehensive COVID-19 stimulus bill, President Trump now says he's willing to sign a stand-alone bill that'll give Americans a $1,200 paycheck. UCLA political science professor Richard Anderson calls the move a political Hail Mary.
This seems to me, in his circumstances, to be a fairly rational strategy, but it's the rational strategy of somebody who's completely cornered.
And the president says he wants lawmakers focused on confirming his Supreme Court pick, Amy Coney Barrett, and stimulus talks will not take place again until after the election. In Brooklyn last night, Orthodox Jews taking to the streets to protest a move by Governor Cuomo to limit religious gatherings in COVID-19 hotspots.
One of the prime places of mass gatherings are houses of worship. I understand it's a sensitive topic, but that is the truth.
The governor now using a color-coded system to designate COVID-19 hotspots in the state, yellow, orange, and red. In the red zones, things pretty much shut down.
It prohibits mass gatherings. Houses of worship can only allow up to 10 people. Restaurants have to pivot back to takeout only, and schools must switch to remote-only learning.
And a so-called cluster action initiative impacts 7 regions of the state, including Broome County, which is in the yellow phase right now.
We have what I call a COVID cluster problem. What's our strategy? Crush the cluster and stop the spread.
Governor Cuomo says it's up to local governments now to enforce the COVID closures.
But we can sit here all day long
and come up with laws and rules. They are only as good as their enforcement.
The seven areas of the state currently under the gun must follow through with the closures by Friday. The governor says they'll be shut down for 2 weeks while state officials review their COVID infection rates. Along the Gulf Coast, they're getting ready for Delta.
When it makes landfall in Louisiana, it will either be a Cat 4 or weaken a little bit to a Cat 3. Looks like it could be making landfall the center of the cone from the National Hurricane Center right around Morgan City, Louisiana.
That is forecaster Jeff Berardelli. Fellow weatherman David Parkinson says Delta isn't a big storm, but it is powerful.
It will emerge into the Gulf later tonight, and then it will take the next day or so, ramping back up to a Category 4 storm. Now, I don't think that this storm will be quite as tiny in terms of the eye size as it was earlier, but it's not a ginormous storm by any stretch of the imagination.
This is the sixth time that a portion of the Louisiana coastline has been in the cone of a major storm this year alone. Delta expected to make landfall along the Gulf Coast later this week. Still to come this Wednesday, the Bills game on Sunday could get sacked. Former New York State Senate leader Joe Bruno has passed away, and collecting cans for cancer in DeWitt, New York.
Well, very good afternoon to all. We're looking at a changeable afternoon. Everything from sunshine to showers and some gusting winds. Forecast details are coming up. We'll see you in 10 minutes.
Okie dokie, Kevin Williams checking the stories, making news where you live in New York and Pennsylvania. Wednesday, October 7th, the Buffalo Bills game on Sunday against the Tennessee Titans, now in serious jeopardy after another Titans player tested positive for COVID-19. The Bills are scheduled to play in Nashville this weekend. That game is in jeopardy. More shutdowns are coming to COVID hotspots across New York. Governor Cuomo says he's rolling back reopenings with a new color-coded system in the red zones.
No mass gatherings, only essential businesses open, only takeout dining, and schools are closed.
Governor Cuomo also restricting religious gatherings in red zones. The areas around the red will be designated as orange, and we'll see gyms, salons, and indoor dining shut down.
Anything that involves travel and face-to-face interaction has really been hit. So, you know, it's just very, very tough.
Heidi Zimmer-Meyer is with the Rochester Downtown Development Corporation. She says foot traffic in the Flower City is down significantly because of the pandemic. That's hurting a lot of local businesses.
We are seeing it when you go to garages. They're empty. So you're definitely seeing a lot of people not coming to the office right now.
In Binghamton, which is now a yellow zone, church gatherings will be cut in half, and weekly COVID testing will now be required for students and teachers at school. Pennsylvania making some changes to the rules when it comes to public gatherings. Family Life's Paul Price.
Governor Wolf says starting this Friday, October 9th, amended orders will allow for venue occupancy limits to play a bigger role in determining the number of people permitted at both inside and outside events. The governor had previously set limited indoor gatherings to 25 people and outdoor gatherings to 250 people, but those limits became a contentious issue among residents and state lawmakers who were especially riled over its impact on youth sports. Bob Price, Family Life News.
Thank you, Bob. Former New York State Senate leader Joe Bruno has passed away. The Republican lawmaker served in Albany from 1977 to 2008. In 2009, Bruno was indicted on federal corruption charges. Those charges were later overturned. Joe Bruno was 91. The latest Emerson College poll out of Pennsylvania shows Democratic White House hopeful Joe Biden clinging to a 5-point lead over President Trump in the Keystone State. Pollster Spencer Kimball says most voters in the Commonwealth are concerned about the economy.
I think it's a larger conversation that people are having about opening the economy, not opening the economy. And as we have these conversations, I see voters are still thinking.
And Kimball says the pandemic is the second biggest issue facing voters in Pennsylvania right now, with the election less than a month away. Republican Senator Pat Toomey and former Pennsylvania Governor Ed Rendell teaming up to call for congressional term limits. Family Life's Terry Diener.
In a joint statement, the two said Republicans and Democrats still have a lot in common ground. Rendell, a Democrat, and Toomey, a Republican, said that big structural change in how Washington, D.C. does business is needed to solve the problems facing Americans, and they proposed congressional term limits as the answer. Terry Diener, Family Life News.
Thank you, Terry. Pennsylvania's largest city sued the state of Pennsylvania today over its gun laws. There's been a sharp spike in gun-related crimes this year in Philadelphia, and Democratic leaders, including the mayor, want the ability to enact their own firearm restrictions. State law prevents local municipalities from doing that. All changes to firearm statutes must come from Harrisburg. Fighting cancer. One can at a time.
He's going.
Meet Lawrence Siegel from DeWitt, New York. For the past decade, he's been collecting cans to get cash to help fund cancer research.
When I see bottles and cans on the side of the road or in a trash can, or I go up and down the thruway or 41 or 690, I think to myself, you know, that's money that could help out a cancer patient.
Siegel makes dozens of stops every single day collecting old cans and bottles. He then donates all the money from those items to help fight cancer. Siegel says he's collected over, get this, 50 million cans ever since he first started over 10 years ago. The Rays get even. Sunny time. 2 minute drill.
Thank you, Bill. Tampa Bay Rays hot, hitting four homers and set a new postseason record, throwing 18 strikeouts in a 9-inning game in their 7-5 win against the Yankees. Aaron Hicks said, oh well.
I mean, it's just one loss, you know. We're going to be playing again tomorrow, and we just got to come out hot like we did today. And
series tied at one. Bueller. Walker Bueller and four relievers combined on a three-hitter to lead the Dodgers to a 5-1 victory against the Padres in their National League Division Series opener in Arlington. The Braves scored 6 runs in the 7th inning to pull out a 9-5 win against the Marlins game one of their National League Division Series. The Astros have taken a commanding 2-0 lead over the A's and their American League Division Series after a 5-2 victory. George Springer with 2 homers and said, this is fun.
You don't know if you're ever going to get back here, so the times that you are here, you might as well try to have fun.
To the NBA, the Lakers held off the Heat 102-96 to take a commanding 3-1 lead in the NBA Finals. Anthony Davis said, had to win.
So guys are already on edge coming into tonight. And then we see the message from, you know, our leader saying it's a must win. And he just left it at that.
To the WNBA, the Breonna Stewart Show.
Three lane to the cup. Breonna Stewart with 23 points.
Stewart would score 26, would be named the MVP as the Storm won their second WNBA championship in 3 years, crushing the Aces 92-59. To the NHL draft, the Rangers go first and
with the first pick in the 2020 NHL draft, the New York Rangers are proud to select Alexi Lafreniere.
Los Angeles Kings selected Ontario Hockey League center Quentin Byfield second overall. That's the highest drafted black player in NHL history. Sabres took the speedy Jack Quinn with the number 8 pick, New Jersey picking Dawson Mercer, and the Flyers selecting Tyson Forrester. To the NFL, the Titans had 2 more players test positive for COVID-19. Their home matchup with the Bills Sunday could be in jeopardy. Stephon Gilmore of the Patriots and Maurice Hurst of the Raiders also testing positive. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Dolphier.
Thank you, Sonny. Still to come on this Wednesday edition of the Noon Report, vice presidential debate tonight, getting ready for Hurricane Delta and Baby Shark at an Oklahoma prison.
The moral and the practical debate over embryo-destructive stem cell research has long been over, but our tax dollars are still paying for it. Why? For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. In 2001, President George W. Bush limited federal funding for embryonic stem cell research to already existing lines of embryonic stem cells. While it wasn't a complete ban on the research itself, it did prevent any further federally funded destruction of human life and instead prioritized funding for research into adult stem cells. Now, to be clear, President Bush did not ban stem cell research. He didn't even ban embryo-destructive research or the private funding of embryo-destructive research or the funding of embryo-destructive research by the states. He did not even ban federal funding of research on stem cell lines created from embryos that had already been destroyed. He only banned the federal funding of stem cell research that required the destruction of any new embryos. President Obama, almost immediately upon taking office and by executive order, reversed Bush's decision. Since 2009, the number of embryonic stem cell lines approved for federally funded research has grown from 60 to 484. Embryos were destroyed to create those new stem cell lines, and our federal tax dollars paid for it. Now, of course, even if all the wild dreams of life-saving treatments were realized by this research, it would never justify the taking of any innocent human life. Still, a decade later, this is important, not a single therapy has been derived using the stem cells from embryo-destructive research. Dozens of therapies have been derived using stem cells from non-embryonic sources, and well over a million patients have benefited from adult stem cell treatments. As it turns out, the promise that embryonic stem cells, because they have the potential to turn into a greater variety of cells, would be more effective, well, that was simply false. What's called pluripotency did not mean more effective, as was widely assumed. And that was even before a Japanese scientist, Shinya Yamanaka, was awarded a Nobel Prize for his work in turning adult skin cells, S-K-I-N, into pluripotent stem cells, S-T-E-M. In other words, we are now able to derive cells with the same pluripotency as embryonic stem cells without destroying a single embryo. So why has the current administration designated funding for the creation of 106 new stem cell lines acquired by the destruction of embryos? Since 2017, between $250 and $300 million of federal tax dollars has been designated to embryo destructive research each year. Look, this is not what pro-life citizens expected from an administration that's been in so many other ways so pro-life. And that's why in early September, 94 members of Congress joined Senator Roger Wicker from Mississippi in a letter urging President Trump to issue an executive order to end the taxpayer funding of human embryonic stem cell research. Look, the fact is, President Bush got this one exactly right. And President Obama got this one exactly wrong. Reversing this reversal on the funding of embryo-destructive research should have been among the very first executive orders, one of the very first orders of business, all the way back in early 2017. Please come to Breakpoint.org to see Senator Wicker's full letter to President Trump, and then contact the White House and your congressional leaders. Let them know we must stop funding the destruction of human life. For Breakpoint, I'm John Stone Street.
Coming up on 20 minutes past the hour this Wednesday afternoon, we got some wind to talk about today. Here's weatherman Kevin Williams.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. Rather changeable conditions are being witnessed and observed across our region today. On the midday weather map, the result is from a cold front that's crossing the area. In the wake of the front, skies will clear, and we are anticipating a good end to the work week with sunshine. Our call, though, for this afternoon, mixed conditions. We'll find clouds, intervals of sunshine, a couple of showers around, gusting winds, high temperatures 60s, low 70s in eastern Pennsylvania. Some wind gusts will exceed 40 miles an hour, especially in elevated and exposed areas. But tonight the winds subside. Skies will partially clear, though there could be a shower in parts of western and central New York, low temperatures 40s. For tomorrow, cooler day overall. Sun-cloud mix with an afternoon shower in a few spots. High temps, 50s and low 60s. Mostly sunny, pleasant, warmer Friday, 60s to near 70.
All righty, Kevin Williams, appreciate it. If you're just joining us, here are some of the stories we're following for you today, Wednesday, October 7th. Debate night in America, the first and the only vice presidential debate will start at 9 o'clock tonight in Salt Lake City.
Vice President Mike Pence and Senator Kamala Harris have indicated they are looking forward to tonight.
Nicole Killian reporting, former Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker helping Vice President Mike Pence get ready for tonight's big debate. He says the VP will show Americans tonight just how far left the Democrat Party has shifted.
Senator Harris is the epitome of that. She's got a voting record, according to Newsweek, that literally is more liberal than Bernie Sanders, the most liberal voting record in the entire United States Senate last year.
The next presidential debate, meantime, scheduled for next Thursday in Miami. President Trump says he's ready to go, but Joe Biden says he's not so sure.
If he still has COVID, we should shouldn't have a debate.
The Democratic White House hopeful campaigning in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania yesterday, hours after President Trump ordered a sudden end to COVID-19 stimulus talks until after the election. The president now says he is willing to sign a standalone bill that would send a $1,200 check to every single American home. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell says with the election just a few weeks away, both sides have been unable to come to an agreement on a larger stimulus measure.
Partisan differences have been more pronounced, and I think it's highly unlikely that we'll get an agreement to do another rescue package here in the near future.
But waiting is not an option for a lot of businesses, like Arizona pizza shop owner Mike Jensen.
I'm sitting here with zero income, using my reserves, and I'm out.
Even though he's canceled COVID talks until after the election, President Trump tweeting last night that Congress should approve $25 billion for the struggling airline industry and $135 billion to help small businesses across the country. The ISIS operatives charged in the beheading deaths of dozens of hostages, including American journalist James Foley, will appear before a judge in Alexandria, Virginia today. The terrorists, known as the Beatles because of their British accent, were captured on the battlefield of Syria 2 years ago.
These men will now be brought before a United States court to face justice for the depraved acts alleged against them. As for their ringleader, Mohammed Emwazi, infamously known as Jihadi John, he faced a different kind of American resolve, the mighty reach of our military.
Federal prosecutor John Demers says in order to get the ISIS operatives into the U.S. to face trial, the death penalty was taken off the table. First, schools were closed. Now there are restrictions on businesses and houses of worship in parts of New York City that have seen a spike in coronavirus cases. Governor Andrew Cuomo says he wants to limit mass gatherings.
The religious community has to agree to the rules, and they have to agree that they are going to follow the rules.
Cuomo says the enforcement efforts will start on Friday, the governor unveiling a new color-coded COVID-19 designation plan yesterday, red, orange, and yellow. Changes coming to Pennsylvania's rules on public gatherings. Governor Tom Wolf loosening restrictions for both indoor and outdoor events. April Hutchinson is with the state health department.
There is a balance between our economic health and our public health, and they're both very interdependent on one another.
The new guidelines, which take effect Friday in Pennsylvania, will replace limits of 25 people indoors and 250 outdoors. Hurricane Delta expected to make landfall along the Gulf Coast late this week. This woman able to escape the storm while vacationing in the Cancun.
You can never really be ready for a hurricane, much less a Category 4 in an area that's not yours.
Forecaster David Parkinson is keeping his eye on Delta.
It will emerge into the Gulf later tonight, and then it will take the next day or so, ramping back up to a Category 4 storm as it makes an eventual northward push towards Louisiana.
This would be the sixth time this year alone that Louisiana has been hit by a major storm. Well, make no mistake about it, 2020 has been tough for a lot of folks, and if this year makes you want to just go live underneath a rock, well, now you can. Hotels.com is making it happen.
They're offering a chance to literally live under a rock until after the election. A man-made cave 50 feet underground in New Mexico can now be rented as a vacation home. It's available for 5 nights from November 2nd to the 7th. The company says political fatigue is real, but this gives someone the chance to relax, recharge, and recover. The booking page goes live Friday morning.
That is Dean Mucho reporting. We are coming up on 25 minutes past the hour. Next at noon, we're going inside out with Martha Monikas Foster. Today's topic, dealing with grief during a pandemic. Our guest, writer, mother, and widow, Clarissa Mole. Let's listen in.
I'm wondering if you could describe for us what the impact of pandemic isolation was on a family that was already grieving.
You know, grief is a very lonely experience. It's hard for people to understand who haven't endured it themselves. And the pandemic really cut us off from the physical support systems that we had enjoyed. We no longer got to go to church. Our kids didn't go to school anymore. And so all of those physical support systems were suddenly gone. The pandemic also increased the anxiety that we had around loss. We had just endured a sudden, unexpected, tragic loss. And to hear these stories again, it made you feel like, could this happen to me? Could this happen again? Mm. And so I think the anxiety that was a part of that, those first few months of pandemic, really made our grief more difficult to bear.
Oh, that must have been difficult. That must have been difficult. What were the best things that the church or individual Christians did to try and make your isolation and your family's isolation less lonely?
Well, the way I like to describe the response of the church, both to grief and also in the pandemic, was that we fumbled toward love. I think that's how it really worked. Nobody knows really what to do or what to say when someone loses a loved one. And nobody knew what to say when a pandemic hit either. But people kept showing up. I had a friend from church who committed to texting me weekly to check in and make sure I was okay, even though we couldn't meet face to face anymore. Folks from church continued to bring us meals, even though we couldn't go out to the grocery store, we couldn't order from restaurants, and they couldn't even stand on the front step to talk to us when they dropped them off. Mm. So people got creative. Mm. And even though it was challenging, even though grief in pandemic was really lonely, people kept showing up and offering us the gift of their presence.
Clarissa, scripture shows us, well, among many other things, how an ideal church works, how God's people can work together as a body guided by God's Holy Spirit. What are helpful ways Christians could begin now, today, to care for and support people who are grieving, isolated, or lonely?
You know, my husband, Rob, wrote a book called The Art of Dying. Mm-hmm. And in it, he talked about the ways that the church could come around people who were caregiving for dying people and come around to care for the dying. And as he did his research, as he worked in hospice and in a funeral home, he discovered that there was a single thing that dying people needed most. They needed presence, mm-hmm. the gift of presence. And I think that that's exactly true for grieving and isolated and lonely people, too. They need to know they're not alone. We know through scripture that God never leaves us alone, mm-hmm. but God is unseen, and in grief and loneliness, it can be really hard to know that he's present. And if the church is the hands and feet of Jesus in the world, it's our job to make material, to incarnate that God who is unseen to the people who are suffering. And I think that's the great joy and honor of the church, mm-hmm. to be the hands and feet of Jesus to people who are grieving and isolated and lonely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Beautifully said. What encouragement would you offer to people who are listening and feel alone right now?
Well, after Rob died, I decided to wear black for 3 months. I just needed that physical kind of manifestation that I felt different on the inside, and I needed to somehow say it on the outside. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've often thought that as we sit in our sanctuaries, if everybody we knew in that sanctuary wore black to represent the burden of grief that they carry. Maybe it's a job loss or a relationship that's strained, a child who's wayward. I really think that most of the people in the sanctuary would be wearing black. And I think the thing that people who feel alone need most is the encouragement of those among them who say, hey, you're not as alone as you think you are.
Yeah.
I'm carrying a different burden, but I'll walk with you. Mm-hmm. And that presence on the road of suffering is the gift that people who feel alone need most. They know that God is with them, but they also need to know that people are with them too.
Mm. Part of the difficulty I'm finding is the practical, because I know that the people in my life who feel lonely right now are people who would really like the hug, you know, and the touch. the pandemic is vicious and unkind in many ways, but one of those is the way that it keeps us apart.
You're right that physical touch is a hard piece of that, but we keep doing the other things we can do until we can hug each other again.
Mm-hmm. Yes, very, very well said.
Thank you, Martha. Great job, as always. That is Widow Clarissa Moll speaking with our very own Martha Manikas Foster about dealing with grief during the COVID-19 pandemic. Good stuff. Let's head to the Weather Center one more time before we leave you today. Kevin Williams.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. Rather changeable conditions are being witnessed and observed across our region today. On the midday weather map, the result is from a cold front that's crossing the area. In the wake of the front, skies will clear, and we are anticipating a good end to the work week with sunshine. Our call, though, for this afternoon, mixed conditions. We'll find clouds, intervals of sunshine, couple of showers around, gusting winds, high temperatures 60s, low 70s in eastern Pennsylvania. Some wind gusts will exceed 40 miles an hour, especially in elevated and exposed areas. But tonight the winds subside, skies will partially clear, though there could be a shower in parts of western and central New York, low temperatures 40s. For tomorrow, cooler day overall, sun-cloud mix with an afternoon shower in a few spots, high temps 50s and low 60s. Mostly sunny, pleasant, warmer Friday, 60s to near 70.
All righty, Kevin Williams, appreciate it. Finally at noon, two Oklahoma prison employees and their supervisor face cruelty charges for forcing inmates to stand handcuffed for hours. And listen to this on repeat. That is cruel and unusual punishment. Prosecutors say four inmates were secured to a wall while that song played on a loop at a loud volume for hours. The Baby Shark song gained huge popularity a couple of years ago, and the music video has since been viewed more than 6.5 billion times. That is the world we live in this Wednesday. As always, thanks for joining us. I'm Bill Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.